Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we're going to discuss... Patrick, what are you doing?
I'm just taking notes.
Well, this is audio, so the typewriter doesn't really work so well.
Oh yeah, because of the sound.
All right, so we're here in the Foster basement.
Yes, we are.
And it's a good thing we're hunkered down in the basement because we had a terrible thunderstorm.
We almost got killed by lightning like an hour ago.
It was unbelievable.
It was horrifying.
It's like, it's been like super hot and humid, D.C., you know, still summer.
Yeah.
All day. And then
close.
I pull up to your house and all of a sudden it starts raining and thunderstorms and lightning. And you said your dog almost died.
Yeah. Our chihuahua might have burst into flames, like spontaneously combusted. I don't know.
Because
he was so scared.
Because he's afraid of thunderstorms. Right. In that dog sort of way. Yeah.
Although, I mean, I know this is audio, but I got to tell you guys, my first instinct when that lightning strike came through was to throw myself in front of Jim to protect him from that lightning. So I just want people to know.
I wasn't scared. I was okay.
I know you weren't.
Although,
I was trying to protect you. I just wanted to absorb the lightning for you.
If you do have a thunder shirt available, I will wear
it. Pass it over. Yeah. It's just nice to have a weighted shirt sometimes. But also, Jim, what do you think of my new...
I
put this on Twitter, my new Now Play-In homemade. I got a little distracted and I made some shelves yesterday.
Go on the Twitter and check this out, the Mr. Patty. So you put up a Now Playing sign where you can put the record album up there with the words Now Playing.
Yeah, I was inspired by many that I've seen online. Scott Parks especially is great about putting his on
there. He has
a there.
Really good one.
Yeah, it's really
I have
nice.
A small non Now Playing little shelf.
I like
that
yours
I have.
Too, though. I think yours is
I
cool.
I bought that off of Etsy.
Oh, did you? That's cool. See, I like that. I'd love to get mine going so I can, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to take two pieces of a palette, cut them, and then spray paint them and send them to you for $50. So let me
well,
know.
That's kind of what Etsy is.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny. I like the one I have, and it's nice. And you
it's
can,
really cool.
And you can put, I use it like I'll put a record album up there or a CD or a cassette. So whatever I'm playing, it goes up there. But what I realized on the Etsy is, you know what a lot of people do? They just invest in a 3D printer.
Yeah.
And then they they make items that way.
Right. That's not cool.
And it's nice. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but that's pretty much all it is. It's not like
it's
a handcrafted,
not the handcrafted touch.
Yeah, kind of
piece. Exactly.
Yours is definitely handcrafted.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Very
you can actually get splinters from it. So that's another
that's right.
thing I like.
Okay, so... The reason why I bring this up, actually, I have no reason why I bring this up other than we're in your basement and we're talking
but
about
there
music.
There is a good reason.
Okay.
And I want you to look around the room, Jim. Now, what one thing do you not notice in the room that you normally might
have
noticed?
First off, are these shelves with the cassettes, is that new as well?
They are new.
Oh,
yes,
that's
and
nice.
So are those over there. I went on a little shelf building rant
because
I found a good pallet on the street.
So you're asking, what do I not notice? Was there something here before that is no longer here?
Yes, sir.
Well.
It would be the books, Jim.
The books.
Books down here.
Because they were reorganized recently by your youngest offspring.
My youngest. When she was home, we took all the books out of here and reorganized them in another room. So we have a library now. Colonel Mustard is in there with a candlestick.
All right.
So, the books.
And all right.
That brings us to books.
All right. So before we get into books, it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster. Out of my coffin.
And we're drinking Nimble Giant and we're talking about books.
Yeah, Nimble Giant's working
on
it.
One particular book, right? Do we have music for this, Paul?
Oh, we do.
Welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle? Book Nook.
Wasn't that great theme music?
Okay, now we're going to say something about the music.
Yes, we do. We have to talk about this.
Okay, because the first time you played the music on the show, you added it in post.
That's right, because it wasn't recorded yet.
So it wasn't recorded yet.
Yeah.
And you set it up, and you said, how about that music, Jim? And I go, I sort of, whatever.
Because neither of us
knew.
Because
I didn't hear it.
Right.
And yes, people, we do edit this, so that's an amazing thing right there.
So a lot of people thought Jim was slagging the music.
Yes, but I hadn't heard it yet. And when I heard it, I thought it was tremendous. And then the second time you played it, that became a lost episode because the episode
that's when I tried to save
went away.
It. That's when I tried to save it with Satan. Yeah.
Yeah. This time, hopefully, everything's going to work out. And I can finally say to you and Mike Wagner, who worked with you on this, that I love
the brilliant Mike Wagner.
Yeah. I love the jingle. Yeah. I love the music. It's
so
fantastic.
Great.
It's so much better than
you,
I could have hoped. And when I finally did hear it for real the first time, I put it on the car stereo and just kind of put it on a loop for a little while and just laughed. I just laughed. It was so much fun. And my wife laughed and everybody had a good time. So it's really, really well done. I love the music.
Well, thank you. And Mike, thank you so much. And we're continuing to work on that music. It's evolving. And hopefully Mike will be appearing soon in a Rockin' the Suburbs event.
He will. He will.
So
he's we'll coming see. Out here. His
one of his offspring.
He has an offspring himself. He has one of those too. And she goes to American University here in DC.
Yep.
And so we get to see him from time to time, and we're going to see him soon and have him on the show.
Yeah, it's like Parents Weekend. It's going to be fun. But
so, book.
Speaking of books, you have
a book today.
I do, and
I'm very excited about this book.
Yeah, I want to thank the author, Rich Tupica, who sent me a copy of this book. It's a really beautiful volume. It's called There Was a Light, The Cosmic History of Chris Bell and the Rise of Big Star. So Chris Bell was, Jim, I don't know, how would you put this? I think that Chris Bell came up with many of the concepts, the sound, the production values of Big Star. I know Alex Chilton gets a lot of credit.
Right.
But here's one of the, I have a couple of key takeaways from this book, and there's some really nice things about this book. I'll hand it to you.
I'm very excited about this book.
Jim, one thing I want you to notice in that book, too, are the lovely photographs. There are so many beautiful reproductions of really interesting photographs. You and I have been to Arden Studios. There's actually pictures of Arden under construction and some really lovely shots of when they first founded it. But when Number One Record came out, it was universally praised by rock critics. Rock criticism was evolving at the time. It was only, 1972? Things were very early on in rock criticism. But as with anything, even today in media, when you have to present a story for an audience and you want to frame that story, you're gonna seize on something that they might know. So a lot of people said, hey, Alex Chilton from the Box Tops, his new band is, Big Star. And Alex Chilton, The Letter, all this.
Right. By the way, that was a huge hit song.
Oh, my God. So, it was a massive song. They toured that band for 5 years all around the world. But Chris Bell engineered most of the record and wrote half the songs and sang half the songs. And so he was right at the heart of everything that was Big Star. So this book sort of tells the history of Big Star through Chris being the central figure. And his brother talks a lot about his interactions with Chris. And there's a lot of focus on the record I Am the Cosmos. And one of the things I did not know until I read this book, like Number One Record, I Am the Cosmos, which is a fantastic record, Jim.
It's so good.
It's really great. Was created over a long period of time. It wasn't done in one burst. It wasn't like they booked the studio and went in. Alex and Chris were very used to being able to go into Arden with John Fry because it was a newly built studio, and they were used to, taking their time and working on every song very meticulously. And he did sort of the same thing with I Am the Cosmos, his solo album. He put it together in four different studios, including partly at Arden. One thing I didn't know was that he went to a studio in Europe that was actually the place where Elton John recorded Honky Chateau. It was actually called the Honky Chateau. If Elton's going to work in a studio when Elton in 72 or 73 at his peak, that's going to be a good studio. And he spent some time in England and he put it together over a long period of time. But I don't know. What do you think about this record? I mean, I sort of discovered it later after I became a big, fan of Alex and Big Star and then found out, it was out there. But how do you sort of see it in the Big Star, universe, and how are people that are big Star fans?
You know? I Am the Cosmos, right?
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, you'll have to fill me in as to like what was released prior to this, but
sure.
The actual album I Am the Cosmos didn't come out until like 92.
Yes, that's right. It was never really officially released. He never really finished it.
Right.
He never really let it go. That's exactly right. It was Rykodisc.
Right.
When they undertook this big reissue campaign of Big Star's Third and Number One Record and all that stuff, they got the rights to all that.
I remember it being a big deal.
That's right.
In the early 90s because
yeah.
And let me put you
1992 was when it was reissued by Rykodisc. Yeah, that was the first time it was available. Yeah.
Right. So let me put you in sort of my place at that time, right? So here I am coming off of the 80s when I really got into like quote-unquote college alternative rock and all that kind of stuff, and then learned of Big Star kind of through the bands that Big Star influenced, right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
REM, Replacements, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Then here I am in the early 90s. I'm out of college. I'm in my first job. I'm reading things like CMJ and stuff like that, right? You know, and I'm going to shows because I live not too far from Chicago, so I'm able to go to shows and stuff like that. So anyway, and it was an exciting time because that was the time when, you know, kind of Nirvana had hit and it kind of changed the whole landscape of the music industry. And so suddenly it felt like people were into cool music in a bigger way, but not too big that I absolutely remember when Rykodisc put this out.
Yeah.
Because it was a big deal. It was like, here's this like lost record, this Chris Bell record, and he was a big deal in Big Star, and you really need to listen to this. And I went out and bought it.
Yeah.
Like that shortly
Same
after
here.
It came out, right?
Yeah.
And I loved it. It is one of the most sort of beautiful, heartbreaking, tender, endearing sort of albums that you'll ever hear, right? It feels completely like a labor of love.
Yeah.
He was not concerned at all about how the music was going to be accepted or go over or who was going to, or the commercial potential of it. I don't think, he needed to get this music out. And for whatever reason, it sort of took a long time to find that audience. But when it did, I think a lot of people had the same kind of reaction, right?
Yeah.
It just kind of shoots you right in the heart.
It really does. And when you read this book too, Jim, you get a little bit deeper into what Chris Bell struggled with. He struggled with depression. He struggled with his place in the world. He struggled with his relationship to God and religion. He died, Jim, weirdly enough, at 27.
I know.
And he was part of that weird thing. And he died on an icy street in Memphis on a winter's night, you know, which isn't a common thing in Memphis, but it's, you know, something that happened. People don't know exactly what happened. He was actually leaving the recording studio. I mean, and we don't want to dwell on that. You know, he obviously left the earth way too early before he had figured out a lot of stuff about his life. 27 is a baby, right? You haven't really, I mean, you're 78, I'm 81 years old. We've just started to figure out how to live life ourselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the important thing here is that he was constantly recording, constantly working, constantly evolving, constantly becoming, you know, to use a phrase. And one of the things that I think's really interesting about this book is that it really sort of says to me, anyway, to kind of put it in a nutshell, Big Star's Third was Alex's sort of first solo album, in my opinion. And I Am the Cosmos, it really is the bookend to that record. You really need it to look at it that way. Radio City, I don't know, it falls somewhere in between where they, you know, just sort of put another record out. It's got amazing songs on it, you know.
Right.
Probably their best known song is on Radio City. But, you know, what I think is important is that exactly what you said. He was such a sensitive, feeling, incredible songwriter. And he had two bands before Big Star that were really important in the formation of Big Star. And it was a scene in Memphis where they all got together. And, you know, Jody Stevens was a big part of that. And John Fry was a big part of that. And there was a lot that he was trying to figure out.
And when I say, like, put this in context of the 90s, this was all recorded in the mid-70s.
That's right. It was all recorded in the mid-70s.
But
about 2 or 3 years.
It felt so like perfect for us later on.
Oh, I know. That's what's amazing.
15
about
to 20 years later, right?
Yeah.
It's really amazing. I'll tell you who I think of when I think of Chris Bell, to put it in context, maybe for people who are more into like the college rock or the 80s thing or whatever. I think of him a lot like Grant Hart.
Ah, that's really interesting.
Right? So it's,
yes,
it's the,
that's really
it's the other guy in the band. Like, the one guy became sort of the face of the band or the star of the band or whatever. But then the other guy, who was sort of more troubled, who had more internal turmoil in his life, right? But was truly like the real sensitive one,
that's
right?
Beautiful,
and when you
Jim.
Go back and you look at his music, you're like, man, there is really something there. There's really something coming out of those records,
that's
right?
Really good,
right?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And you know, to finish that up, you couldn't have Husker Du without Grant Hart, and you couldn't have Big Star without Chris.
Absolutely
Bell.
Not.
Yeah. So,
how does this relate to the book? What is the
book?
Well,
play us something off I Am the Cosmos,
all
and
right.
then I'll gather my thoughts.
All right.
Yeah.
Say my love for you ain't real. But you don't know how real it feels. All I want to do is to spend some time with you so I can hold you. Sister says that I'm no good. I'd reassure her if I could. All I want to do is to spend some time with you so I can hold you.
Beautiful, man. It's hard
you
to turn
and your
that
sister,
off.
Yeah, right.
I know. So let me talk about the book just really quick. I mean, if you're interested in Chris Bell, if you're interested in Big Star, if you're a real fan, consider yourself obsessed, you know, with it or really into the band, you have to get this book. Like, you can't not get it. It's really the last word, I think, on Chris Bell. This book has handwritten lyrics, Jim, from the Hotel Leonardo da Vinci in Italy when he was visiting his brother and writing songs over there. It's got a reproduction of his report card from one semester when he went to school at the University of Tennessee. It's got amazing photographs of Big Star. It tells the Big Star story in a kind of a cursory way. I think the important thing about the Big Star story is that Alex, to a certain degree, and Chris, to a higher degree, were also early on very much into the recording process. They knew how to work the equipment. They knew how to get sounds. They were obsessed with the Beatles. Like, how did Jeff Emerick, you know, get that engineering sound? And they wanted to learn everything. And John Fry taught them all that stuff at Arden. So they had a hands-on studio environment. And I think, you know, that later let Alex, you know, produce some great records by the Cramps and many others. But I think mostly it's about Chris and somebody that was pretty challenged to live in this world because he was so sensitive and such a great artist and really was, you know, very, very gifted. But it was, you know, he was in many ways too soon for his time. I think, to be completely frank, his sexuality, his place in the world were not particularly accepted in the time he lived in, and he did his best to fit in, and I think he was confused a lot of the time. This book is an oral history, so much like our friend Robert Dean Lurie's book, where he looks up everybody that was involved, he gets a lot of, you know, ex-girlfriends and friends and a lot of people that have differing opinions, people that played, you know, maybe bass in a band with Chris for a couple of weeks, you know, get some time. But if you like Big Star, please lay out for this volume. It's beautiful. It, whatever you pay for it, I know it's not cheap. It's, you know, it's probably $35 or something like that, but just get it. You'll be really glad you did. And it's a beautiful volume.
That's
look
wonderful.
At the Yeah, look at this nice presentation, Jim, too. It's on beautiful paper. The pictures are reproduced in color. It's just, it's really, really great. And it'll open your eyes. And there are, you know, a lot of quotes in here. And they even go into the reunion stuff at the end, the big star reunion and
all
that stuff.
So the book is called There Was a Light.
There Was a Light, The Cosmic History of Chris Bell and the Rise of Big Star by Rich Tupica. It is out on the Hozak Books label, HZB007.
I want to make a comparison here between Chris Bell and Alex Chilton.
Okay.
There's a Big Star documentary.
Yes, it's very good.
That came out several years ago.
Yeah, it's available on Netflix, I think.
It is called Nothing Can Hurt Me.
Yep.
And there's a part in there with, if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but isn't there a part with like Chris Bell's parents?
Yes, there are.
And it's so touching.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
It's like so touching. Yep. And they were so like proud of him.
They really were.
You know, and... But they understood, you know, sort of his troubles and his demons and all of that. And it really was sad. But
and his brother, too. His brother, you know, in this book is a main character because he tried to support Chris's career, became his manager after he left Big Star and all this stuff. And, you know, I think it's also really interesting illuminating how Chris and Alex got along. They totally respected each other's talent, but they weren't friends.
Well, and what I was going to say is to compare those two personalities who were both... You know, had their own psychological issues that they had to deal with, but they were really kind of came at it, from my perspective, in different ways. One was Chris Bell kind of had that, you know, had those struggles already inside of him and was looking for music as a release, as a way to find some kind of solace in this world, right? Through music.
Right.
Whereas Alex Chilton, I think the music business kind of drove him crazy.
That's really
do you know what I mean?
Really well put. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to just be left alone to kind of do his art and have people listen to it, but he didn't want to deal with any of the other stuff, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
And he, I think, intentionally subverted it.
Yeah.
Much like somebody who followed in his footsteps later and wrote a song about him.
Right, right, exactly. So,
that's well said.
So check out this book and definitely.
Yeah, it's great. And I will say really quickly, you know, the steadying figure in all this is Jody Stevens, who we kind of met.
You
know,
see that.
He was just very much like, let's keep it together, guys, and, you know, and a really great steadying figure who. You know, pretty much inherited Arden Studios too. And John Fry, the engineer, gets a lot of credit for being way ahead of his time. And, you know, Jeff Emmerich eventually mixed some of the tracks on I Am the Cosmos. So if you don't know the record, you gotta
get it. It's a beautiful record.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful
really
sounding record.
God, it's so great.
It's really amazing. It's one of those. Listen, I Am the Cosmos is one of those records that everybody should have in their collection.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think.
Yeah. And, you know, rest in power, Chris. I know, you know, it's been a long time and all that, but he's up there somewhere. So hopefully he's in a good place. It's a great book and really a great achievement and great job by Rich. And, you know, I think that anybody who puts this much work into somebody's life and tells that story and illuminates it is really good. So,
that's wonderful. Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's my book, Jim.
Good book note.
Thank you. And, yeah, definitely check out I Am the Cosmos. There's a Rhino Handmade at one point put out this 35-track version that has early tracks from his band Ice Water and Rock City. There were bands in Memphis. So you can find all that on the streaming. So treat yourself.
All right. It's great stuff. And if anybody has any other thoughts about Chris Bell or Big Star or Alex Chilton, you know, send those our way.
Free books.
Yeah.
Send them to Patrick.
You can call
612-440-1984.
I probably said that so fast people can't even understand what I'm saying. 612-440-1984. 867-5309. The other thing you can do is email us rock@suburbspod.com.
Right.
Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. And you can leave comments there.
Yes, if you allow me, Jim, I do want to say, too, I'm such a big fan of our recently introduced At the Movies with Jim. If anyone has a movie coming out, give us a shout. We'd love to screen it, even if it's a documentary or a partial documentary.
Well, documentaries are great.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know, man. We'd love to talk to you about it. So if you're listening for the big star and you're making a movie about him, let us know.
All right, I'm looking for a playout song here.
I Am the Cosmos. Yep.
Yeah, Off I Am the Cosmos. I'm going to play, I think, appropriate for our conversation, I Got Kind of Lost.
Yeah, great song.
All right, We'll be back with something cool tomorrow. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll see you all tomorrow. I remember there was a some kind of life-size casket. <It's>, I don't see now. I think that's where you used to sleep, right? Well,
there is that.
Yeah.
Well, Screaming Jay Hawkins.
No, anymore. Okay. What were you referring to?